Good evening, dear listener, and welcome to another enchanting episode of Drift Off, where dreams and stories blend into a perfect bedtime lullaby. If you're enjoying the show, please consider subscribing to help keep the podcast ad-free. You'll find all those details and links in the show notes. Tonight I will be reading several chapters from the book, Little House on the Prairie. This story is about a little girl named Laura Ingalls and her family who leave behind their little house in the big woods of Wisconsin and are now heading to Kansas. The story captures the essence of pioneer life through the eyes of a young Laura. She provides vivid descriptions of the challenges and joys of frontier living, with detailed accounts of hunting trips, encounters with Native Americans, and the hardships they face as early settlers. This book has captured the hearts of both young and old, making it a cherished classic. And so, as always, my friend, take a nice deep breath and let it out slowly. Feel all the tension in your body just melt away. You're all cozy and safe in your bed. So it's time to relax and let go now. Start by softening your forehead and smoothing out your brow. Relax your eyes and unclench your jaw. Let your whole face be smooth and relaxed. Now imagine your shoulders dropping down and easing back. And just let them go. And feel the relaxation and heaviness flow down through your arms, down through your hands, and all the way into your fingers. Let them be loose and limp. Feel your chest and belly become soft. Let your back melt down into your bed. And allow that relaxation to flow down into your hips, into your legs, into your feet, and all the way down into your toes. Every muscle in your legs feel heavy, loose, and limp. And as our story begins, your body and mind will keep on relaxing. Just listen to my words and allow your imagination to take you away, and everything will begin to slow down. Even your breathing and thoughts will slow down as you listen. It's all preparing you for a peaceful sleep. My friend, there's nothing else you need to do right now. else you need to be. So just lay back, relax, and enjoy the story. Chapter 23, Indian War Cry. Next morning, Pa went whistling to his plowing. He came in at noon black with soot from the burned prairie, but he was pleased. The tall grass didn't bother him anymore. But there was an uneasiness about the Indians. More and more Indians were in the creek bottoms. Mary and Laura saw the smoke from their fires by day, and at night they heard the savage voices shouting. Pa came early from the field. He did the chores early and shut Pet and Patty, Bunny, and the cow and calf into the stable. They could not stay out in the yard to graze in the cool moonlight. When shadows began to gather on the prairie and the wind was quiet, the noises from the Indian camps grew louder and wilder. Pa brought Jack into the house. The door was shut and the latch string pulled in. No one could go outdoors till morning. Night crept toward the little house, and the darkness was frightening. It yelped with Indian yells, and one night it began to throb with Indian drums. In her sleep, Laura heard all the time that savage yipping and the wild throbbing drums. She heard Jack's claws clicking and his low growl. Sometimes Pa sat up in bed, listening. One evening, he took his bullet mold from the box under the bed. He sat for a long time on the hearth, melting lead and making bullets. He did not stop till he had used the last bit of lead. Laura and Mary lay awake and watched him. He had never made so many bullets at one time before. Mary asked, "What makes you do that, Pa?" "Oh, I haven't anything else to do," Pa said, and he began to whistle cheerfully. But he had been plowing all day. He was too tired to play the fiddle. He might have gone to bed instead of sitting up so late making bullets. No more Indians came to the house. For days, Mary and Laura had not seen a single Indian. Mary did not like to go out of the house anymore. Laura had to play outdoors by herself, and she had a queer feeling about the prairie. It didn't feel safe. It seemed to be hiding something. Sometimes Laura had a feeling that something was watching her. Something was creeping up behind her. She turned around quickly, and nothing was there. Mr. Scott and Mr. Edwards, with their guns, came and talked to Pa in the field. They talked quite a while. Then they went away together. Laura was disappointed because Mr. Edwards did not come to the house. At dinner, Pa said to Ma that some of the settlers were talking about a stockade. Laura didn't know what a stockade was. Pa had told Mr. Scott and Mr. Edwards that it was a foolish notion. He told Ma, "If we need one, we'd need it before we could get it built, and the last thing we want to do is act like we're afraid." Mary and Laura looked at each other. They knew it was no use to ask questions. They would only be told again that children must not speak at table until they were spoken to, or that children should be seen and not heard. That afternoon, Laura asked Ma what a stockade was. Ma said it was something to make little girls ask questions. That meant that grown-ups would not tell you what it was. And Mary looked a look at Laura that said, "I told you so." Laura didn't know why Pa said he must not act as if he were afraid. Pa was never afraid. Laura didn't want to act as if she were afraid, but she was, she was afraid of the Indians. Jack never laid back his ears and smiled at Laura anymore. Even while she petted him, his ears were lifted, his neck bristled, and his lips twitched back from his teeth. His eyes were angry. Every night he growled more fiercely, and every night the Indian drums beat faster and faster, and the wild yipping rose higher and higher, faster, wilder. In the middle of the night, Laura sat straight up and screamed. Some terrible sound had made cold sweat come out all over her. Ma came to her quickly and said in her gentle way, "Be quiet, Laura. You mustn't frighten Carrie." Laura clung to Ma, and Ma was wearing her dress. The fire was covered with ashes, and the house was dark, but Ma had not gone to bed. Moonlight came through the window. The shutter was open, and Pa stood in the dark by the window looking out. He had his gun. Out in the night, the drums were beating and the Indians were wildly yelling. Then that terrible sound came again. Laura felt as if she were falling. She couldn't hold on to anything. There was nothing solid anywhere. It seemed a long time before she could see or think or speak. She screamed, "What is it? What is it? Oh, Pa, what is it?" She was shaking all over, and she felt sick in her middle. She heard the drums pounding and the wild yipping yells, and she felt Ma holding her safe. Pa said, "It's the Indian war cry, Laura." Ma made a soft sound, and he said to her, "They might as well know, Caroline." He explained to Laura that that was the Indian way of talking about war. The Indians were only talking about it and dancing around their fires. Mary and Laura must not be afraid, because Pa was there and Jack was there, and soldiers were at Fort Gibson and Fort Dodge. "So don't be afraid, Mary and Laura," he said again. Laura gasped and said, "No, Pa." But she was horribly afraid. Mary couldn't say anything. She lay shivering under the covers. Then Carrie began to cry. So Ma carried her to the rocking chair and gently rocked her. Laura crept out of bed and huddled against Ma's knee, and Mary, left all alone, crept after her and huddled close too. Pa stayed by the window watching. The drums seemed to beat in Laura's head. They seemed to beat deep inside her. The wild, fast yipping yells were worse than wolves. Something worse was coming. Laura knew it. Then it came, the Indian war cry. A nightmare is not so terrible as that night was. A nightmare is only a dream, and when it is worst, you wake up. But this was real, and Laura could not wake up. She could not get away from it. When the war cry was over, Laura knew it had not got her yet. She was still in the dark house, and she was pressed close against Ma. Ma was trembling all over. Jack's howling ended in a sobbing growl. Carrie began to scream again, and Pa wiped his forehead and said, "Phew." "I never heard anything like it," Ma said. He asked, "How do you suppose they learned to do it?" But nobody answered that. "They don't need guns. That yell's enough to scare anybody to death," he said. "My mouth's so dry I couldn't whistle a tune to save my life. Bring me some water, Laura." That made Laura feel better. She carried a dipper full of water to Pa at the window. He took it and smiled at her, and that made her feel very much better. He drank a little and smiled again. "There, now I can whistle." He whistled a few notes to show her that he could. Then he listened, and Laura, too, heard far away the soft pitter-pat of a pony's galloping. It came nearer. From one side of the house came the drum throbbing and the fast, shrill yapping yells, and from the other side came the lonely sound of the riders galloping. Nearer and nearer it came. Now the hoofs clattered loudly, and suddenly they were going by. The galloping went by and grew fainter down the creek road. In the moonlight, Laura saw the behind of a little black Indian pony and an Indian on its back. She saw a huddle of blanket and a naked head and a flutter of feathers above it, and moonlight on a gun barrel, and then it was all gone. Nothing was there but empty prairie. Pa said he was derned if he knew what to make of it. He said that was the Osage who had tried to talk French to him. He asked, "What's he doing out at this hour, riding hell-bent for leather?" Nobody answered because nobody knew. The drums throbbed and the Indians went on yelling. The terrible war cry came again and again. Little by little, after a long time, the yells grew fainter and fewer. At last, Carrie cried herself to sleep. Ma sent Mary and Laura back to bed. Next day, they could not go out of the house. Pa stayed close by. There was not one sound from the Indian camps. The whole vast prairie was still. Only the wind blew over the blackened earth where there was no grass to rustle. The wind blew past the house with a rushing sound like running water. That night, the noise in the Indian camps was worse than the night before. Again, the war cries were more terrible than the most dreadful nightmare. Laura and Mary huddled close against Ma. Poor little baby Carrie cried. Pa watched at the window with his gun, and all night long, Jack paced and growled and screamed when the war cries came. The next night, and the next night, and the next night were worse and worse. Mary and Laura were so tired that they fell asleep while the drums pounded and the Indians yelled, but a war cry always jerked them wide awake in terror. And the silent days were even worse than the nights. Pa watched and listened all the time. The plow was in the field where he had left it. Pat and Patty and the colt and the cow and calf stayed in the barn. Mary and Laura could not go out of the house, and Pa never stopped looking at the prairie all around and turning his head quickly toward the smallest noise. He ate hardly any dinner. He kept getting up and going outdoors to look all around at the prairie. One day his head nodded down to the table and he slept there. Ma and Mary and Laura were still to let him sleep. He was so tired. But in a moment he woke up with a jump and said sharply to Ma, "Don't let me do that again." "Jack was on guard," Ma said gently. That night was worst of all. The drums were faster and the yells were louder and fiercer. All up and down the creek, war cries answered war cries, and the bluffs echoed. There was no rest. Laura ached all over, and there was a terrible ache in her very middle. At the window, Pa said, "Caroline, they are quarreling among themselves. Maybe they will fight each other." "Oh, Charles, if they only will," Ma said. All night, there was not a minute's rest. Just before dawn, a last war cry ended, and Laura slept against Ma's knee. She woke up in bed. Mary was sleeping beside her. The door was open, and by the sunshine on the floor, Laura knew it was almost noon. Ma was cooking dinner. Pa sat on the doorstep. He said to Ma, "There's another big party going off to the south." Laura went to the door in her nightgown, and she saw a long line of Indians far away. The line came up out of the black prairie, and it went farther away southward. The Indians on their ponies were so small in the distance that they looked not much bigger than ants. Pa said that two big parties of Indians had gone west that morning. Now this one was going south. It meant that the Indians had quarreled among themselves. They were going away from their camps in the creek bottoms. They would not go all together to their big buffalo hunt. That night, the darkness came quietly. There was no sound except the rushing of the wind. "Tonight we'll sleep," Pa said. And they did. All night long, they did not even dream. And in the morning, Jack was still sleeping limp and flat on the same spot where he had been sleeping when Laura went to bed. The next night was still too, and again they all slept soundly. That morning, Pa said he felt as fresh as a daisy, and he was going to do a little scouting along the creek. He chained Jack to the ring in the house wall, and he took his gun and went out of sight down the creek road. Laura and Mary and Ma could not do anything but wait until he came back. They stayed in the house and wished he would come. The sunshine had never moved so slowly on the floor as it did that day. But he did come back. Late in the afternoon he came, and everything was all right. He had gone far up and down the creek and had seen many deserted Indian camps. All the Indians had gone away, except a tribe called the Osages. In the woods, Pa had met an Osage who could talk to him. This Indian told him that all the tribes except the Osages had made up their minds to kill the white people who had come into Indian country, and they were getting ready to do it when the lone Indian came riding into their big powwow. That Indian had come riding so far and fast because he did not want them to kill the white people. He was an Osage, and they called him a name that meant he was a great soldier. Soldat de Chien, Pa said his name was. He kept arguing with them day and night, Pa said, till all the other Osages agreed with him. Then he stood up and told the other tribes that if they started to massacre us, the Osages would fight them. That was what made so much noise that terrible night. The other tribes were howling at the Osages, and the Osages were howling back at them. The other tribes did not dare fight Soldat de Chien and all his Osages, so next day they went away. "That's one good Indian," Pa said. No matter what Mr. Scott said, Pa did not believe that the only good Indian was a dead Indian. Chapter 24, Indians Ride Away. There was another long night of sleep. It was so good to lie down and sleep soundly. Everything was safe and quiet. Only the owls called, "Hoo, hoo," in the woods along the creek, while the great moon sailed slowly over the curve of the sky above the endless prairie. In the morning, the sun shone warmly. Down by the creek, the frogs were croaking. They cried by the edge of the pools, "Knee-deep, knee-deep, better go round." Ever since Ma had told them what the frogs were saying, Mary and Laura could hear the words plainly. The door was open to let in the warm spring air. After breakfast, Pa went out, whistling merrily. He was going to hitch Pat and Patty to the plow again, but his whistling suddenly stopped. He stood on the doorstep, looking toward the east, and he said, "Come here, Caroline, and you, Mary and Laura." Laura ran out first, and she was surprised. The Indians were coming. They did not come on the creek road. They came riding up out of the creek bottoms far to the east. First came the tall Indian who had gone riding by the house in the moonlight. Jack was growling, and Laura's heart beat fast. She was glad to be close to Pa, but she knew this was the good Indian, the Osage chief who had stopped the terrible war cries. His black pony came trotting willingly, sniffing the wind that blew its mane and tail like fluttering banners. The pony's nose and head were free. It wore no bridle. Not even one strap was on it anywhere. There was nothing to make it do anything it didn't want to do. Willingly, it came trotting along the old Indian trail as if it liked to carry the Indian on its back. Jack growled savagely, trying to get loose from his chain. He remembered this Indian who had pointed a gun at him. Pa said, "Be still, Jack." Jack growled again, and for the first time in their lives, Pa struck him. "Lie down, be still," Pa said. Jack cowered down and was still. The pony was very near now, and Laura's heart beat faster and faster. She looked at the Indian's beaded moccasin. She looked up along the fringed legging that clung to the pony's bare side. A bright-colored blanket was wrapped around the Indian. One bare brown-red arm carried a rifle lightly across the pony's naked shoulders. Then Laura looked up at the Indian's fierce, still brown face. It was a proud, still face. No matter what happened, it would always be like that. Nothing would change it. Only the eyes were alive in that face, and they gazed steadily far away to the west. They did not move. Nothing moved or changed, except the eagle feathers standing straight up from the scalp lock on the shaved head. The long feathers swayed and dipped, waving and spinning in the wind as the tall Indian on the black pony passed on into the distance. "Deschenes himself," Pa said, under his breath, and he lifted his hand in salute. But the happy pony and the motionless Indian went by. They went by as if the house and stable and Pa and Ma and Mary and Laura were not there at all. Pa and Ma and Mary and Laura slowly turned and looked at the Indian's proud, straight back. Then other ponies and other blankets and shaved heads and eagle feathers came between. One by one on the path, more and more savage warriors were riding behind Deschenes. Brown face after brown face went by. Ponies' manes and tails blew in the wind. Beads glittered. Fringe flapped. Eagle feathers were waving on all the naked heads. Rifles lying on the ponies' shoulders bristled all along the line. Laura was excited about the ponies. There were black ponies, gray and brown and spotted ponies. Their little feet went trippity-trip-trip all along the Indian trail. Their nostrils widened at Jack, and their bodies shied away from him, but they came on bravely, looking with their bright eyes at Laura. "Oh, the pretty ponies! See the pretty ponies," she cried, clapping her hands. "Look at the spotted one." She thought she would never be tired of watching those ponies coming by, but after a while, she began to look at the women and children on their backs. The women and children came riding behind the Indian men. Little naked brown Indians, no bigger than Mary and Laura, were riding the pretty ponies. The ponies did not have to wear bridles or saddles. and the little Indians did not have to wear clothes. All their skin was out in the fresh air and the sunshine. Their straight black hair blew in the wind, and their black eyes sparkled with joy. They sat on their ponies, stiff and still, like grown-up Indians. Laura looked and looked at the Indian children, and they looked at her. She had a naughty wish to be a little Indian girl. Of course, she did not really mean it. She only wanted to be bare naked in the wind and the sunshine, and riding one of those gay little ponies. The Indian children's mothers were riding ponies too. Leather fringe dangled about their legs, and blankets were wrapped around their bodies. But the only thing on their heads was their black smooth hair. Their faces were brown and placid. Some had narrow bundles tied on their backs, and tiny babies' heads stuck out of the top of the bundles. And some babies and some small children rode in baskets, hanging at the ponies' sides beside their mothers. More and more and more ponies passed, and more children and more babies on their mothers' backs, and more babies in baskets on the ponies' sides. Then came a mother riding with a baby in a basket on each side of her pony. Laura looked straight into the bright eyes of the little baby nearer her. Only its small head showed above the basket's rim. Its hair was as black as a crow, and its eyes were black as night when no stars shine. Those black eyes looked deep into Laura's eyes, and she looked deep down into the blackness of that little baby's eyes, and she wanted that one little baby. "Pa," she said, "get me that little Indian baby." "Hush, Laura," Pa said sternly. The little baby was going by. Its head turned, and its eyes kept looking into Laura's eyes. "Oh, I want it, I want it," Laura begged. The baby was going farther and farther away, but it did not stop looking back at Laura. "It wants to stay with me," Laura begged. "Please, Pa, please." "Hush, Laura," Pa said. "The Indian woman wants to keep her baby." "Oh, Pa," Laura pleaded, and then she began to cry. It was shameful to cry, but she couldn't help it. The little Indian baby was gone. She knew she would never see it anymore. Ma said she had never heard of such a thing. "For shame, Laura," she said. But Laura could not stop crying. "Why on earth do you want an Indian baby, of all things?" Ma asked her. "Its eyes are so black," Laura sobbed. She could not say what she meant. "Why, Laura," Ma said, "you don't want another baby. We have a baby, our own baby." "I want the other one too," Laura sobbed loudly. "Well, I declare," Ma exclaimed. "Look at the Indians, Laura," said Pa. "Look west, and then look east, and see what you see." Laura could hardly see at first. Her eyes were full of tears, and sobs kept jerking out of her throat. But she obeyed Pa as best she could, and in a moment she was still. As far as she could see to the west, and as far as she could see to the east, there were Indians. There was no end to that long, long line. "That's an awful lot of Indians," Pa said. More and more and more Indians came riding by. Baby Carrie grew tired of looking at Indians and played by herself on the floor. But Laura sat on the doorstep. Pa stood close beside her, and Ma and Mary stood in the doorway. They looked and looked and looked at Indians riding by. It was dinner time, and no one thought of dinner. Indian ponies were still going by, carrying bundles of skins and tent poles and dangling baskets and cooking pots. There were a few more women and a few more naked Indian children, Then the very last pony went by. Pa and Ma and Laura and Mary still stayed in the doorway, looking, till that long line of Indians slowly pulled itself over the western edge of the world, and nothing was left but silence and emptiness. All the world seemed very quiet and lonely. Ma said she didn't feel like doing anything, she was so let down. Pa told her not to do anything but rest. "You must eat something, Charles," Ma said. "No," said Pa, "I don't feel hungry." He went soberly to hitch Pat and Patty, and he began again to break the tough sod with the plow. Laura could not eat anything either. She sat a long time on the doorstep, looking into the empty west where the Indians had gone. She seemed still to see waving feathers and black eyes, and to hear the sound of ponies' feet. Sweet dreams, my friend. Sleep well.